Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, what up? They eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use only if necessary. Homie, investors is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind of beauty of life. But when my mom said again, you could be Christ, I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training in difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging. Splitting duchess up, strap up, the army's a school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish scales the cops love. The time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holster. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case. But the wish at the police, look at the name Lake. Go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new here we
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force. Of what we fight for, my heart goes to you beautiful wife in war.
Enlist and more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule the strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. You hear my words?
Gordon from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Free the land. Real Share and Green. Welcome to another edition of Resort Industry Radio. Are your whole boom on secure? Where it goes a fivefold. Our first goal, to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners, which is to cultivate the consciousness necessary to triumph for themselves and their community. Our students must first be able to read and comprehend what they are reading. Our curriculum will focus on basic literacy and vocabulary building. Two, to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. In our assessment, and culture provide necessary foundation to overcome the central self-hate and white supremacist orientation provided in Western institutions. If our students understand who they are, where they come from, and the truth of how they would, the world we inhabit came into being, they will long gone be content to accept the prescribed role of the oppressed man and woman, but instead live up to their true heritage and purpose. Three, to transform the black criminal mentality to a new African mentality. The origin and root of our national oppression is not so much the structure of capitalist society as it is our irrational response to the contradictions. Engaging in the culture of criminality introduced to our people on these U.S. shores is a form of genocidal orientation with a genocidal intent. In the context of our relationship with the U.S. productive system, our curriculum introduces an alternative conscience, one that allows our students to not only see the contradiction inherent in the criminal mentality, but to abandon it for the new African mentality. Four, to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of our new African communities. The conscience and attitude of our people is a reflection of their conditions. Once sufficiently educated and developed, our students in conjunction with our faculty will implement the initiatives in our community, which will be the foundation for new institutions capable of feeding, clothing, housing, educating, defending our new African diaspora so our universe on Earth has a functional component. GLU students will be instilled with the tools to effectively lead prison with both a purpose and a means to fulfill that purpose in the community-based institution we create. New African prisoners will be armed with the tools to get out, stay out, and influence the very culture in their community where the schools, the poverty prison pipeline currently flowing, is closed off at its source, our community. The citizens will be affected demise. You know, those are our goals for Georgia University. You can find these goals and more about Georgia University on our website, which is georgiauniversity.edu.com for more information. You know, I want to thank everybody who's been joining our broadcast since 2014. Thank everybody who's been supporting us over the years. I want to thank everybody who's been currently educating themselves in the community and environment. You know, and free all the cat new African citizens and all the political prisoners, new African political prisoners. Now, to welcome to the show tonight, Elder Dadisi Yero. I'm about to open the Conrad line so we can start this interview. Jumbo, Conrad.
Who Jumbo?
The Jumbo. Now, wait. Okay, how you doing? How you doing tonight, Conrad? How everything going on with you, man, this evening?
Well, I'm still standing firm, you know. So, you know, despite it all, yeah. You know what I'm saying, the contradictions that one is confronted with out here, you know, one has continued to do what he can do to try to make things better. You know, for myself, my family, and our people that, you know, we coexist out here with, as well as trying to look out for the brothers that we left behind the walls.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. First of all, thank you for coming to our broadcast. Share your knowledge with understanding. Thank you for things you did in the past, present, and things you do in the future, right? So I salute you, brother. Before we get into this, tell the people about who you are so they can understand exactly where you're coming from, like where you grew up. Where you from, what you introduced, things of that nature, so people can get a better understanding of who you are in particular.
Well, you know, I was primarily, you know, raised in Los Angeles County, but specifically Compton. And, you know, I grew up in Compton, you know, basically all my life. You know, we went to one elementary school, one junior high school, one high school. You know, in the process of going to school, you know, eventually I became an honor student. Wow. You know, and had a scholarship to go to college, but quite naturally, you know, I got caught up in the system. You know, I got caught up in that street culture, and the street culture led me to a life of crime. And I wound up, you know, going to prison for 44 years on a 70-year life sentence.
Okay. You know, in the history books, right, you know, your history as a street organizer is historically known as founder of the one that Power Rules sets and you know originated. You won the older Power Rules and
Let's back up for a minute. I cannot say I was street organizing. You know what I'm saying? You know, I had influence, you know, amongst my peers because of the activity that I was engaged in. But as far as the organization aspect of it, you know, I don't think, you know, during my era, you know, when it came to gang banging, you know, we wasn't organizing nothing. You know what I'm saying? It was just cliques that people coming together because we grew up in the same neighborhood, you know what I'm saying, and we identified with the same struggle within them neighborhoods. And a lot of times the struggles that we was confronted with was against each other. So the organizing aspect, you know, I cannot say, you know, gangbanging, you know, is a form of organization. To me, for me, gangbanging is a form of chaos. And that's what we contribute to. We contribute to a form of chaos within our community. And that's what, you know, I'm fighting against. That's what I'm fighting against today. You know, when I first came to prison, you know, some of the elders, you know, who took me under their tutelage, you know, let me know from Jump Street, you know what I'm saying, that they are opposed to the criminal gang mentality. And I came up in the system with that criminal gang mentality. And over a period of time, you know, they helped purge me of that way of thinking and that type of activity in which I once abided by. Because, like I said, I was loyal to the gang. You know what I'm saying? But in the end, you know, I felt the gang betrayed me. When the gang betrayed me, you know, I sought a better life. And the better life I saw, you know what I'm saying, was contributing to the welfare of my people. You know, even behind prison walls, you know, I had never been confronted with racism on the street, at least overt racism. It was covert, but not no overt racism. Prison system, you know what I'm saying, there was no hiding, you know, what racism was. And who the racists were. And that's what I fought against when I was in prison as a result of fighting against racism in a racist institution. You know, I wind up spending 44 years, like I said earlier, on a 7-year life sentence. You know, I was dealt with parole in 9 years after I got in. You know, the maximum I should have did was 15.
Yeah.
So I did my 15 and some. You know, I almost tripled that 15. You know, I was 1 year away from tripling it. That 15-year sentence. So I did my maximum. But after that, it was all in excess, and that was because of the things that I believed and the things that I fought for. And like Comrade George, you know, always said, you would never count me amongst the broken man. And I'm one of them individuals that left the system who was not broken and never lost sight, you know what I'm saying, of who we are and what we need, you know, what needs to be done.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My first question is,
for me, the subculture is a culture that exists within the dominant culture, in which the dominant culture does not necessarily serve the best interests of the people. So there might be a group of people, you know what I'm saying, who within that system who seek that identity for themselves that's just going to best serve their best interests. I'm saying, and as new African revolutionaries, you know, we saw that, hey, this system was not serving our interests. You know, we needed something that served us as new Africans, because who going to fight better for new Africans other than new Africans? So we established a culture of our own, but a lot of times that culture, you know, was centered around, you know, the criminal aspects of survival. We sold drugs, you know what I'm saying, we robbed people. You know what I'm saying, as a means of survival, because we've seen that this system under capitalism was not serving our interests. Yes, you can get a job, make a minimum wage, but what can minimum wage get you within a capitalist society? I'm saying you're living from paycheck to paycheck. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, the minimum wage is a form of slavery. I'm saying when they had that, the revolution in America, and I'm not talking about America, I'm talking about the Civil War. You know what I'm saying? All that was about is economics, you know what I'm saying? How they was going to best serve this country as opposed to serving us. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, the Civil War was about the ending of slavery. It wasn't about the ending of slavery. You know, that was all about economics. You know, the northern countries was basically industrialists, while the southern countries, I'm saying, were just best farm labor. Farm labor, they needed slavery to survive. But the industrialists, they needed cheap labor to survive. And the cheap labor they saw, they best saw to survive, You know what I'm saying? Hey, the end of slavery paid people slave wages and don't have to care about your survival after that. You have to survive on your own. So, yes, yes, you know, we had to step our own soul culture, but a lot of us, you know, we saw that, hey, the only way that this system was going to serve us, that we had to take from it. We had to expropriate funds from it. You know what I'm saying? If they would give us our 40 acres and a mule, you know, maybe we could have been content with 40 acres and a mule. But we didn't get no 40 acres and a mule. You know what I'm saying? They released us to a system, I'm saying, that was not serving our interests and that was trying to keep us in bondage. And a bondage that a lot of us fought, you know, fought against. We didn't fight for that bondage. We fought against that bondage, and we still are fighting against that bondage. You know, even today, you know, with the job that I got, people be telling me, hey, I'm making a good wage. I'm not making a good wage. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. You know what I'm saying? And because I got to live out here, you know, things at times get kind of hard because there's other things that I want to do. You know, I like to be out in the street serving my people. I like to be out there, you know, being proactive rather than being reactive. You know, I'd like to be out there in the street, you know, fighting for change. But the point is, you know, a person got to have a place to live. A person got to have a place to eat. A person got to have clothing on his back. And this system is not serving us in that manner. But the point is, you know, we can't return back to that subculture that we once coexisted under, because we do know that that subculture will lead us back to prison. And at this time, in this stage of the struggle, you know what I'm saying, to go back to prison is a life sentence for us, and we're never getting out. So we will be dying behind the wall. And I be telling a lot of brothers today that a lot of people get the prison struggle mixed up with, are we struggling to stay in prison, or are we struggling to get out? You know, Comrade George fought to get out of prison. He was not fighting to stay in prison. He was fighting to get out of prison because he realized the real struggle was out here.
No doubt.
You know what I'm saying? So right now, I'm in the struggle, the real struggle. And that's to serve our people out here.
True indeed. You know, in regards to transforming from your criminal mind to a new revolutionary mind, right? What significant was it for you to adopt the African name, to change your name, or be reborn? How significant it was, and what does your name mean as well?
Can you repeat that?
Okay, I was saying in regards to your transformation from a criminal mentality to a new revolutionary mentality, right? How significant was it for you to change your name to an African name, and what does your African name mean?
The reason why I changed my name, you know, one of the elders, one of the brothers who initiated us learning Swahili, you know, get us establish a language of our own, a language that we could identify with, you know, he was basically, you know, seeing the character traits of each individual, the positive character traits. And due to the fact at that time I was a youngster and I asked a lot of questions because, you know, I wanted to know, you know, I was seeking knowledge.
Yeah.
So the brother said, you know what? Your name should be .DC. And he said, your name should be Don DC because you are very inquisitive. You ask a lot of questions. You are very curious. So those are the traits. And he said, your past name, is your past name because your foundation was built on your last name, your past name. But the point is, he said, hey, we're all about transforming, and we transform into this new man and new woman mentality. So we need to shed some of the things of the past. So I adopted the name, you know, D.C. Yero, and when Yero means, I'm saying, warrior, you know, inquisitive warrior. Because I'm saying, you know, even though I left that street life alone, I still had that warrior mentality. You know, I was willing to fight and die for what I believed in. So that's why it was significant, you know, for me to make that transformation as far as my name was concerned. It wasn't to hide who I was. It was the point is about to be recognized the changes within. And the things that I need to live by.
Yes, sir. Now, you mentioned a new man, new woman, right? What exactly is that, you know, in regards to the ideology or form of transformation? Is it a part of transformation, or those are the terms that you utilize? What exactly is new man, new woman for the people who are listening, the people who are listening in the future?
The new man and new women, I'm saying, is basically a recognition that, hey, you know, for us as Africans within America, that we need to recognize the changes that lie within us and the changes that lie within us something that we're seeking a new identity, identity that we can hold on to and build upon. So that transformation from the new man to the new woman, I'm saying, it applies to any Africans who become conscious of who they are. Because when we came to America, a lot of us, you know, we lost our identity. You know, we cannot say exactly where we came from with Africa. We cannot say, you know, trace our heritage like a lot of other people. You know, a lot of other people, you know, they can trace their heritage back to who they were. But the point is, we became this new African man, this new African woman. And we had to recognize that. You know, a lot of people say, you know, I don't like to use that word African-American, because the point is, then you're acknowledging, you know, that Americanism within you. And that's what I'm not trying to acknowledge, no Americanism in me, because I'm trying to share that Americanism, because it's that Americanism that led me to a life of crime. It led me to that criminal mentality. It led me to that gang mentality. You know, we are not about crime. You know, we are not about hurting our people. We are not about thinking about ourselves and no one else. So that transformation was significant, at least as far as I'm concerned, because once I transformed, I got rid of a lot of the hate that I had for people, you know, that who I saw as my enemy. And my, who I saw as my enemy, I saw the Africans as my enemy. You know, I had a hate, and I had a lot of hatred for people, you know what I'm saying, who I considered my enemy, as far as who I considered was my rivals. But when I came to prison, I learned some of them, the people I hated were the same as me. They believed the same things that I believed in. You know, a lot of people say, you know, when they look at the gangbangers, you know what I'm saying, and they try to say these gangbangers have politics. You know, I don't think gangbangers have politics, personally. I think gangbangers, yeah, they all believe in the same thing. And what they all believe in, they believe in their neighborhoods. You know, I became a Piru because I live on Piru Street. But what if I did live on Piru Street? What if I lived somewhere else? What right I had became there? So I identified with you. I identified with a neighborhood. Yeah, I didn't identify with our people. But like, yeah, you know, but we all know, you know what I'm saying, under that Willie Lynch syndrome, you know, that's what it was designed for, to create a division within. And as long as we hold on to that slave mentality, you know what I'm saying, they didn't really have to worry about us.
How we came to this system, you know, especially during the Civil War, you know, as a Civil War, it's quote unquote abolished during that time. At that time, that quote unquote abolished slavery. Then, essentially, after that, 14th Amendment, they came along with a new African citizenship, right? You know, they forced that citizenship upon us because we never had a decision. They never gave a decision or choice that if you want to be citizens or not, they force us upon us, right? You know, and even what you spoke about earlier, that we've all been fighting for independence, we've all been fighting to be ourselves, we've all been resisting, we've all been warriors, right? You know, you look at that particular aspect of things, you know, we were forced into a system that wasn't our own, and by not having it, own or possessing anything, our only resort was to be criminals, what you say. Well, our only resort to be criminal, which is our activity. You have a criminal mind, basically, we are still be a slave. But we still to be free, 13 members still be a slave according to the 13 members as well. You know, so everything is interesting we said in regards to who we are and what we got going on, you know. And people need to pay attention to some things more. They need to research and study more and actually experience things to get a better understanding, right? You know, when I look at brothers like you, you know, who behind the line 44 years, I wasn't even born at that time, right? You know, when I look at Atlanta, they brought me 44 years. I'm not even that old right now. You know, I'm not even 44 years old right now. So like, how did brother accomplish that? What he did to the shit, you know, what he did to stay sane, you know, and maintain itself and still be the inquisitive warrior that his attribute defined, you know. So that's very, very encouraging to a brother, you know. And what I wanted to ask you was, what the reason you see? From your own particular experience?
Well, it was one shared with me is a correctional officer said that the only thing they had against us as a people is this, that we was job security, and New African Revolution Nationalists were not job security, but the point is that we was opposed to the criminal activity that people are engaged in. And they need criminal activity to survive. this system survives on criminal activity. You know, if there was no crime, you wouldn't need no prisons. You wouldn't need no jails. You wouldn't need no police. So that's why they was opposed. In other words, you know, even during the hunger strike, you know what I'm saying, former enemies came together, you know, to fight one cause. And that's something they really did hate, because that was supposed to never occur. You weren't supposed to have whites, blacks, Mexicans fighting together against a system. That's unheard of. Yeah. It brought about change, and it brought about changes. You know, if it wasn't for the hunger strike, you know, a lot of us would still be behind walls. You know, once upon a time, we was labeled the worst of the worst. And they said, you know, we was unfit, you know, to survive in the human state. They said we couldn't survive. They said only reason we was programming in the hole because we was in the hole. They said they was to release us to the main line in the way in the world. They was betting on how long we was going to be out there. But all of us who got out, we didn't go back. As far as the New Africans is concerned, the New Africans never went back. You know what I'm saying? And the New Africans, I'm saying, you know, we showed that, hey, we was not the worst of the worst. We was the best of the best of anything. You know what I'm saying? Because, like I say, we've opposed to that criminal gang mentality, and that's something that we fight against. But we recognize that the criminal gang mentality, you know, it existed in us. At the same time, just because it existed in us don't mean we had to act on that criminal gang mentality. And that's where that transformation came in at. That transformation, it enabled us, you know what I'm saying, to fight them demons that lied within, the things that, you know, we were brought up to believe was right. You know, but today, you know, we know what is right. We know what needs to be done. And that's what we're doing every day, trying to make things right, you know what I'm saying, for ourselves, our family, you know, our people. And I'm saying, it's not just limited to black people. It's all limited to all oppressed people. Because we realize all oppressed people, when they come together, you know what I'm saying, they are forced to be reckoned with. So when we came together during that hunger strike, you know what I'm saying, the whites, blacks, and the Mexicans, I'm saying, you know, we realized we was all oppressed under that system. And we fought the challenges. And to be honest with you, I didn't think we was going to win the hunger strike. In other words, but I was willing to contribute, you know, and give my all. I went 59 days without eating during that hunger strike. And that's unheard of, you know. Putting your life on the line doing a hunger strike and almost dying. You know, at the end of the hunger strike, they couldn't even find no blood vessels to put an IV in my arm. My eye, you know, all my blood vessels had shrunk up. But I was willing to give my all, you know what I'm saying, to end the indeterminate shoes. Because I realized, hey, I didn't want our youngsters to wind up like us. In other words, I'm willing to sacrifice my life so that the next generation would not have to go through or succumb to the same thing that I had to go through. And there was other brothers willing to do the same. There was other brothers willing to do the same. So, yeah, we stood firm to the end.
Interesting. In regards to that, right, in the SHU program, when people mention the debriefing process, right, debriefing, what exactly are they talking to, and what is the purpose of that?
Well, the debriefing is the thing is, they said, this, for instance, let's say I'm no longer involved in a certain activity that they deem to be criminal in nature.
Okay.
But I'm still respected amongst my peers within that lifestyle. And they feel the only way that they could seek insurance that you would never return to that lifestyle is to become an informant and to inform of them individuals who are a part of that lifestyle. So even though certain individuals, you know, did, you know, stop engaging in certain activity and was programming, doing the things that they need to do to get out, the system was not willing to accept that as a sign of good faith that, hey, this individual, you know what I'm saying, might be ready to return back to society and is no longer posed a threat, you know what I'm saying, to the community, you know what I'm saying, beyond the walls. So the thing is, they want you to inform on everybody that you know, everybody you've been around, any criminal activity that they might was involved in. They want you to share that information with them. But a lot of times, the information they want is a lie. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, you done had other people that became informants, and they lied on individuals. But the point is, these individuals who lied on other individuals, these became their reliable sources. So if you say anything that contradicts what they're saying, then you're lying because you're not going along with the program. So in the past, you had certain individuals, the system would give them a sheet of paper. The sheet of paper might have 100 names, might have 200, might have 300 names on it. And they want you to say that, hey, all these individuals were a part of this group. Now, this individual who's informing, he don't even know all these individuals on the group. But he gives a stamp of approval saying, hey, they are a part of that group, and then they use this reliable, so-called reliable informant to validate their reason for putting you in the shoe in the first place and keeping you there. So then you have these individuals who come to the shoe or are not a part of these various organizations or various groups. For them to get out, they have to say they are. They have to admit they are something that they are not. Just to appease the system and what the informant had said about them in the past. Or if I had an informant saying that I had committed a serious crime when I was in Folsom back in the 80s. I ain't never went to Folsom until 2015. First time going to Folsom. But they had a so-called reliable informant saying I had committed a serious crime while I was in Folsom, you know, back in the 80s. And they said he was reliable.
The record speaks
for itself. So when I brought that to their attention, you're right. But the point is, so they removed that informant, what he said about me from my files. But what about the other individuals he done informed on with false information that didn't necessarily challenge what was in their file? And that's one thing I did. I always challenged information that I found to be false in my files. Don't mean I won every time, but I did always challenge it. I made sure I kept a record of, my challenge to anything that was being said against me or said about me that was untrue. So a lot of times, the system, they got to lie to keep you there. And see, even when I got out, prior to me getting out, I went to the board and granted me a date. They said I had over 2,000 pages of confidential information in my file. But the point is, nothing ever came of that confidential information because the point is, there was never evidence there to say I was involved in any criminal activity to be charged with. Because when they said you committed a crime, and they never charged you with that crime, they just put it in your file as if it's true, but you've never been charged with it. You've never been found guilty of it, but they holding you in the shoe as if you had been found guilty of it. So, it's a lot of us, that was held, behind the walls. Some people was held in the hold longer than I was. I was in there for 31. I know people was in there 40 years, 50 years. So what could they have done in them 40, 50 years behind, in the shoe, isolated from everybody? They did nothing but existed behind them walls, in isolation.
Yeah.
But that's the sad reality that a lot of us was confronted with behind the walls. And a lot of us, lost hope. And that's one thing I ain't never did. I ain't never lost hope. I mean, when you lose hope, you stop fighting. So I always was fighting for my freedom.
True indeed. You mentioned the hunger strikes. Why did the hunger strike begin? What were the reason for the hunger strikes?
To end solitary confinement. To end cruel and unusual punishment that we was confronted with, within isolation. You had people that was in the hole who came to the hole for a murder. And for a murder, they was given a 3-year shoe term. And so after the 3 years is up, 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And after 3 years, they release you back to the main line. But that's if you commit, and that's what committing a crime. But, you know, and a lot of people that were so situated, like I was situated, we was in the SHU isolation for administrative reasons. Not punitive reasons, but for administrative reasons. You know, that was a decision made by the system to say, hey, these people should not be on the main line. So, yes, and they should be given an indeterminate SHU for it. So my last SHU term that I got was in 1983. And I didn't get a SHU term then. You know, I got sent to Max B. So whereas, and my actual last really SHU term, I got it in 1978, and that SHU term ended in 81. So after that, all my SHU term was administrative reasons. You know, I didn't catch no cases that merit a SHU term after I had caught a case in 78. But I was helped in SHU as if I caught a case that merited me being in there. Like I say, it's just administrative reason, not punitive reason. So I've seen a lot of people who come to the SHU, you know, behind disciplinary offenses, getting released, coming back, getting released, coming back. And the thing about it, when I was in prison, you know, to identify with George was a no-no. You know, you had other Africans, man, saying they'd be afraid to associate with you because you identified with George, because they was afraid of the indeterminate SHU terms. And a lot of them individuals, you know, who out there committing criminal activity and they catch a SHU term, you know, they got a free ticket out of jail if they give them some information about individuals who was doing indeterminate SHUs. So, you know, it was a debriefing thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, for me, it's for liars. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's for people that's willing to work with the system and do whatever the system, you know, asks them to do. And when you have people like that, you know, they are a danger to everybody.
True, indeed.
So they made people afraid to associate with people who was trying to do things that was in our people's best interest.
True, indeed.
A lot of times, some of them briefers is the biggest criminals there is.
Interesting. What were some of the conditions? What were some of the conditions in the SHU that were taking place, you know, saying that violates your human rights?
No human contact with other individuals. In other words, that was the main thing, you know, no human contact with other individuals. In other words, I was in a unit for years. I was the only black in my section. So, And I'm housed in the cell by myself. I go to the yard by myself. No contact visits, no phone calls. You know, all your mail is censored. You know, when you want to go to canteen, your canteen is very restrictive about the things that you can have. And the opportunity to get an education when I was in the SHU was basically non-existent. You might go to the library, you know, check out some books and read some books, you know, and self-educate yourself. You might could take a correspondence course. But as far as the system supporting you, you know, in them type of endeavors, you know what I'm saying, it was basically almost non-existent. And the health care there is terrible.
Yeah.
You know, they'd rather let you die, you know what I'm saying, than give you proper treatment. And nobody had never, who was doing a life sentence, nobody had never been released undoing a life sentence from the SHU. That did not happen. So as long as you was in the SHU, you had no chances of ever getting out of prison. But I did go to the board every time. I ain't never missed the board when I was in the SHU. I went to the board every time because I said, who knows, they might surprise me.
Yeah.
So So the only way you're gonna get surprised, you got to go. Because if you don't go, the show ain't gonna surprise you. But I was never expecting to receive a release date, and I was not expecting a release date when I got one. You know, that was a shock. But I always went because, like I say, that warrior in me, I still got to fight for mine. I still got to represent. And a lot of times, and when I did wind up going to board and getting that date, you know, it basically validated what I already believed in, you know, and they had to admit, you know, all this confidential information they got in my file, you know what I'm saying? It does not merit me continue to be there like I was there.
True indeed. True indeed. You know, upon your release, what have you been doing since you've been out here? You know, you've been out a couple of years. What have you been doing to get back to the community or build the community up or build the African nation or, you know, what have you been doing to contribute to the release of a lot of new African political prisoners and brothers that are behind the enemy lines? What have you been doing since you've been out?
Every now and then, you know, I done gave interviews, you know, speaking about, you know, the conditions within the California Department of Corrections. It's primarily the SHU, you know, and basically how the SHU operates and things that I had to experience in there, you know, prior to getting out. So, you know, I gave a few interviews, you know, spoke out on that. You know, every now and then I come across a few youths, you know, I try to share some knowledge with them about my life, you know, giving them some insight, you know, a lot of things that they're doing today, you know what I'm saying? I done that before. And I come to the conclusion, I'm saying, there's no value in that lifestyle that I once lived. And I'm trying to steer them in the right direction. I should, you know, give them insight, you know, to the contradictions that I lived out. And then how I survived the contradictions. You know, I wish I could be out there doing a little bit more than what I'm doing. It's just that the economics that I'm confronted with out here does not afford me that luxury. You know, yesterday I went to a little, you know, a little townhouse meeting, you know, to talk to a few representatives, you know, from the city council and the police department, the mayor, you know. And they're talking about, you know, trying to cut down on this violence, you know, this black-on-black violence that exists within the community out here, because right now it's getting real horrible out here. You know, and I can't say the youngsters is out of control. I think what it is, and the parents might be out of control, because the point is a lot of things that these youngsters are doing is they somewhat, I ain't saying they support it, but they are somewhat not prevented from occurring, because a lot of people, they know what their kids are doing. They might be in denial, but they know what their kids are doing.
Sure.
And they need to, you know, hold them accountable for it. And that's the problem, is they're not being held accountable. I know a lot of things I did, I hid from my parents. You know, when I was gang banging, when I used to walk through that front door, you know, I'd just take my gang attire off. I didn't want moms to know what I was out there doing in the streets. But today, you know, they don't hide nothing. I'm not saying the parents are scared of them. You know, I think, you know, maybe a lot of times, there's, you know, the parents, a lot of these parents out there, you know, they live their life too. And they feel, well, if their kids doing the same thing, you know, well, they're going to show them the right way to do it. But no, there is no right way to do it. So, you know, went to the meeting yesterday, you know, hear what the people had to say, you know, hear the people speak out, hear their anger, hear their frustration.
Yeah.
And like I say, for me, I feel like we need to regain the trust within our community by doing the work that needs to be done with our youth.
Yes, sir.
We are accountable for our youth. You know, we supposed to be passing the torch on to them. But I think that crack epidemic, you know, hurted us, you know, real bad. Even though I was never out here for the crack epidemic, I think that hurted our people a whole lot. There was no family that was not touched by that crack. And it destroyed family and it destroyed lives.
And still effect, still had effects from then, still having effects in regards to people mind and genetics, and they still had effects today.
Yeah, when I went to prison, you know, they had homelessness, but it was isolated pockets of homelessness. You know, right now, there's homelessness everywhere. You can't escape homelessness out here. So, and that is real sad. So, but that's the system. That's a system that we live in. In other words, you know, people say there's jobs out here. Yeah, there's jobs out here. You know, there's no doubt about that. There's jobs out here, but you become dependent. You become dependent on that job, even in your old age, because, you know, how many people got a nest egg out here? You know, how many people, you know, got an ancestor that's gonna leave them with enough money to support them and their family? Because your job is not necessarily gonna do that. You know, working in a warehouse, you know, working in a warehouse, I mean, yeah, you might pay the bills. That's all you're gonna do is pay the bills. You know, nothing better never go wrong with your car, or you better not never get sick, because you're gonna deplete all the resources that you have. You know, life out here is not cheap.
This is my estate, you know, living in the capitalist world, so you got to have some kind of capital to survive. But how you do what you do with your capital, you're going to recognize what kind of political ideology system you have. You know, if from a corporate economic standpoint, from a scientific socialist, or a social standpoint, or a community fund, whatever it may be, right? But we all use capital for various means and needs, you know.
There's enough wealth out here for everybody, to be honest with you. There's enough wealth out here for everybody if it was, you know, equitably, if it was equitably distributed. It ain't got to be evenly distributed. It's equitably distributed. You know, it's fairly distributed. We all could be living, you know, a comfortable lifestyle. But the point is, for the rich to get richer, somebody else got to get poor. That's the only way they're going to get rich. And the only way for capitalism to survive, capitalism got to expand. Because if it's not expanding, it's going to die. So, ain't no way in the world, there's no way in the world that Bill Gates is going to ever go broke. You know, he's constantly getting richer, 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 richer. You know, every year he become billions and billions of dollars richer. Not billions of dollars poor. He get richer and richer every year.
Yeah.
So if he wanted to spend all this money, he couldn't spend all his money. No, you know, what are you going to spend it on? So, you know, that's how capitalism works. Rich get rich, poor get poor. But like I say, there's enough money out here for everybody.
True indeed. Can you tell the people about your t-shirt business, and how can they purchase shirts or whatever, how they go about obtaining some things for you? But tell them about your t-shirt business.
Well, basically, you know, I do t-shirts and hoodies, you know, in my spare time, but like I say, my spare time, even that is limited. So basically, I do orders. If somebody needs some shirts done, I do some shirts. If somebody needs some hoodies done, I do hoodies. You know, I do funerals. I do birthday parties. I do graduations. You know what I'm saying? I just do what people, I say people, what I do is, the t-shirt business I got is called Way Too Gear. And Way Too means our gear. And when I say our gear, it's our gear as a people. And I print what you like, not what I like. I print what you like. You know, one of my friends a while back, he said, man, he wanted a simple t-shirt, and he wanted the word F-U on it. And, you know, and to me, that's kind of blatant, you know, F-U, you know. I said, man, you sure you want that? Man, yeah, that's all I want. I just want the word F-U on it, you know. So but somebody had sent me a picture one time of an orangutan, and the orangutan is throwing up a finger. So. Yeah. I showed him the picture. I said, you don't need the word on there. You know, the orangutan speaks for itself, you know. And when he seen it, he started laughing. He said, that's what I want. So I tell people, I print what you like, you know. But if you want the FU, I'll put the FU there. You know, but I prefer to do something positive, you know. So I every now and then, you know, when there's an event, you know, like when they had a thing about, you know, the people's protesting, you know, for Brianna. So, you know, I printed some shirts for Brianna, you know. They were doing a thing for Michelle McGee, you know, releasing my elders from prison. And he's one of the elders that's been held in prison longer than anybody, you know what I'm saying, for a crime he didn't even do. You know what I'm saying? So, but he's been held there the longest, so I printed some shirts, you know, for the brothers, you know, they could sell, distribute, you know what I'm saying, to raise, you know, funds on behalf of Rochelle. So, I do a little bit of everything when it comes to printing. You know, I'm basically a novice at it, though, you know, because, you know, I'm not too good with computers, but I'm learning, you know, and I'm getting better, and I try to be a perfectionist. I ain't no perfectionist, though, but I try to get better and better with each shirt I print. So I give it my all. Was if I don't like it, I don't print it. I say, well, I don't print it. I say, well, if it don't come out the quality of work that I would like for myself, you know, I would not give it to nobody else. But that's what I do, you know, on the side. But I'm saying it's not a constant thing because my job, it eats up a lot of my time, and it doesn't afford me the luxury, you know what I'm saying, to commit to the T-shirts and the hoodie, you know, apparel business like, you know, I would like to. So I've been doing that for a little bit over a year now, though. I was printing some shirts tonight, you know. And since what's going on out here in Stockton right now, I said, well, I think right now would be a good time to print some shirts. And I got an image that somebody has shared with me. It says, "Stop killing your own." And they got a brother laid out in the middle of the streets, and two brothers is holding him in the street, and a sister, you know, standing up, you know, like raising her hand up to God, you know, like, when is this madness going to stop? So, yeah. I said, well, I don't like that word, your, you know, stop killing your own, you know, because it seems like we distancing ourselves from our people. So I said, well, let me put the word our on. I think that would resonate with the people a little bit more, because that's what we're doing. We're killing our own, and it needs to stop. So I printed a few of them shirts, you know, today, because I think, you know, that message need to get out there.
And what's spoken about the black-on-black violence, man, how to cycle out the issue behind it, where it came from, man. You know, and it's a perpetual cycle.
And you already know.
Annihilate in our mind state.
And you already know I did some Black Lives Matters already, you know, so you know, that was mandatory. But my thing is, when it comes to Black Lives Matter, I think people really need to realize that, you know, I don't really care what other people, you know, think or say. They always try to say, when we say Black Lives Matter, like we're discounting everybody else, like we just thinking about ourselves. I say to them, that's not what we're doing. So I tell people we need to add one word to Black Lives Matter. You know, it ain't resonating with a lot of people yet, but I feel that we need to add one word. And you know what that one word is?
An hour.
Nope. The word two. Two. Black Lives Matter too.
Yeah.
Because that's what the problem is. See, the problem is, when we say Black Lives Matter, we just saying Black Lives Matter too. You know, our lives matter too. You know, and people say, well, you know, well, when the police be killing these black folks out here, you know what I'm saying? But black folks are killing black folks. Nobody's complaining about it. I'm saying, but you got to realize when black folks kill black folks, the system try to hold us accountable normally. They arrest us, charge us, and put us in jail and put us away for a long time. But when police kill black folks out here, they're not held accountable. Now, if police was held accountable for taking our lives out here, the protest would not be as strong as it is today. But they're not being held accountable. So when we say Black Lives Matter, we're saying Black Lives Matter too. That's all we're trying to tell everybody. Our lives matter just like your life matters.
Without a doubt. You know, we about to come to a close of the show, right? Can you give me your final thoughts? Leave it a quote, a fan, or just some ideas, a concept. Just, what are your final thoughts?
Well, my final thoughts is basically centered around this: that we as a people need to be out there in the streets, you know, fighting for our youth. And I'm not saying on a every so often basis. I mean, we need to be there all the time out there fighting for our youth. You know what I'm saying? We need to put in the groundwork. I'm saying the parents need to be out there. The kids need to be out there. We all need to be out there. The gang members need to be out there. Because when it comes to these gangs out there, I'll be saying this. There is no winners. And when I say there's no winners, there is no winners in gang banging. In other words, I started gang banging back in 71. Now, I had the gang mentality prior to that, but I did not consider myself as a gang member until 71. And the things that I was fighting for then and people was dying for back then, people are still fighting for the same thing and dying for that same thing. But when does it end? Or was, you didn't have the, you didn't have the American Revolution when the United States, I mean, America went to war with Britain, you know, fighting for their independence from Britain because America used to be a colony of Britain. But that war came to an end. Then you had the Civil War. That war came to the end. The North and the South. Oh, well, that war came to an end, and then they just became brothers and sisters all over again. Oh, well, they let go of the past. They were no longer killing each other, you know what I'm saying, for a cause. I'm saying that each side thought they was just in fighting. Then you had the Korean War. Then you had the Vietnam War. You see, then you have all these wars in which all these countries are going to war, and after the war, they reconcile, and they let go of the past. They're no longer dying and fighting over war that was fought, you know what I'm saying? And either it came to a stalemate or one side won or the other, but it eventually came to war, and the killing stopped. But, and them wars did not last long. So you got these gangbangers out there, you know, the Bloods and the Crips and anybody that identify them, they've been fighting a war for over 50 years. And believe me, there's been more lives lost in that war than any of these other wars that I done spoke of. Now, a lot of times it's collateral damage, not necessarily the gang members killing other gang members. They're killing innocent people in the process. And they're still killing innocent people in the process. So I feel, you know, that's a war that need to come to an end. And like the North and the South, you know what I'm saying? You know, those are families fighting against families because some of them believe in slavery, some of them not believe in slavery. You know, but they believe in where they live. They live in the South, they support the South. They live in the North, they support in the North. But I would say that war eventually came to end, but there was family. There was family conflicts. So when you're dealing with these Bloods and the Crips, anybody who identified with them, a lot of them got families on the other side. You know, some of them got brothers. Some of them, their brothers might be in opposing gang.
Yeah.
And they're out there fighting and killing each other, you know, but what are they killing each other over? You know, that's what I'm trying to figure out. You know, what is it over? You know, when does it end? Or was it, there's no winners. So somebody might say, well, they killed my homeboy. And then the other guy said, well, you killed my homeboy. So when do it stop? you know, at some point in time, you got to come to some type of conclusion that, hey,
yeah.
No. So my closing thought basically is I'm saying, you know, we as a people, you know, we need to come together. I'm saying all of us, you know, the Bloods, the Crips, blood, Crips, because you got blood to kill blood, you got Crips to kill Crips. We all need to come together. Let's leave this madness alone. And I'm saying the parents need to be out there. The kids need to be out there. The grandparents need to be out there. We all need to be out there fighting that struggle. And then we need to hold each other accountable. And in the end, if we don't hold each other accountable, it's gonna continue to happen. You know, I'm going to say one more thing. I don't know if you know about the word renegade, but a renegade became a common word that for Indians that did not go along with the codes or the morals of that society. So that Indian who could not go along, they didn't kill him. They didn't put him in prison. He became ostracized. In other words, he was no longer a part of that community. And believe me, rejection hurts. When your people, your family, they all turn their back on you and you on your own. So
yeah.
I think a lot of times, you know, a lot of things that's going on in our community, you know, if individuals cannot go along with the morals and the values that we believe in, they need to be ostracized. You know, they need to no longer be accepted within our communities. Because if they fight against what we're trying to do, you know what I'm saying, we ain't going to kill them. You know, a lot of times we ain't going to even put them in jail. But what we're going to do, just turn a blind eye and allow them to continue to do what they do. You know, they need to be ostracized. Let them know, hey, you're no longer welcome in this community. And I think if people start doing that, I think people will start changing. You know, when I was gangbanging, I wanted to be accepted by my homeboys and homegirls. So I did things that I felt to be that would make me accepted. And the more I did it, it seemed like I was rewarded by being accepted even more. But if my homeboys and homegirls was ostracizing me, was turning their back on me and saying, hey, you no longer being accepted within this community, and I wanted to be accepted, oh, yeah, I would have changed. Look, I stopped gangbanging because I felt betrayed by my homeboys and my homegirls and my enemies because I felt they was not living by the code that I was living by. You know what I'm saying? I felt a lot of them had, you know, had betrayed my trust, and what am I fighting for? You know, and that started me on a journey, I'm saying, you know, of change. So, you know, I don't have the answers, I'm saying, to what's going on in the community. What I'm saying is I always told a answer is better than no answer because when you're trying something, at least you're trying. We can't just give up. And I don't view no generation as being a lost generation. Cause I haven't heard that saying, oh, this is a lost generation. We need to forget about this generation, going to the next generation. No, we can't just... We don't have that luxury of skipping a generation because that's too many people to be skipping. But we can start holding people accountable.
Doubt. No doubt. No doubt. Doubt. Again, I appreciate you coming to our platform to say that's what I'm standing right. I salute you. You help with more success be upon you. And also, if anybody got any comrade, social, low, high enemy lines, you're looking at Georgia University, you can find on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You also contact directly by contacting Georgia University 71 at gmail.com. Again, Georgia University 71 at gmail.com. You also can check our website, which is www.georgiauniversity.gdu.com. Again, it's www.georgejacksongdu.com. Long live the resistance, long live the independent movement, and long live the guerrilla.
Real ass.
Vladimir
Nesterov. Tutashenda.
Yes, sir.